we realized that we have a 6% market share. Now, for a small boutique firm, a handful of executives and few other directors and employees, to be able to have that type of market share in a city of 3.2 million is totally astronomical. That's a huge market share.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com.
Today on the show, the pleasure of speaking with August Benines. August is a co-founder and chief investment officer of CPI Capital, where he leads investment strategies, acquisitions, and asset management. With over 15 years of real estate experience, he has been involved in closing more than $225 million in both multifamily and BTR assets. And August is also the host of the Real Estate Investing Demystified podcast and a recognized voice in the commercial real estate industry. And I actually had the pleasure of interviewing himself and his wife, Ava, a few years back. So please go and re-listen to that episode. They've since then have two awesome young boys and split their time between Canada and Florida. But I'm really glad to have him back on the show to share his awesome experience. But enough out of me. Let's get him out of here. G'day, August. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
Absolutely. My pleasure. And talking about interviewing us, I couldn't wait to get my hands on you when we were at the event in Las Vegas to get to interview you as well. So that was great.
Yeah, that was at Omar Khan and Jonathan Twombly's event. Yeah, that was
exactly
two years ago now. That's a
yes, geez,
time has flown by. But mate, it's great to see you again. The famous beard, I always know who you. So what's been happening since we've last spoke? I know in the green room we're talking a little bit about some of the verticals you're now into, but maybe just give a high level 30-second pitch of what you've been up to, what the company does at CPI.
Absolutely, yeah. CPI, I mean, initially when we founded CPI, we realized the gains that were available in the U.S. multifamily, particularly in the value add space. This was 2018, 2019. And we really wanted to create a platform where Canadians had exposure to U.S. multifamily. At that time, the best performing asset class, right after industrial, multifamily was really the best performing asset class. And it had also beaten the S&P 500 as well. So we felt that we wanted to create a vehicle for Canadians to have exposure to U.S. multifamily. And we went on this venture to be able to do that myself and partner with a couple of great partners and founded CPI Capital. The CPI acronym stands for Canadian Passive Investing. So the idea was for Canadian investors, but as the company grew, we realized there were US investors also interested in partnering with us. Those are LPs and smaller institutional investors like co-GP types and feeder fund types. And so we changed the company's name really to an acronym, CPI Capital. And the idea is really multifamily value add. We were focused, initially we were market agnostic. So we were looking to invest in any market that had the yields we were looking at. And we also didn't have the infrastructure internally to asset manage. So we ended up partnering with a couple of different groups and took down a few deals. It was a great learning experience, sitting somewhat in the back seat, but also being very much involved. And some of the, you know, obviously the market didn't do well, any deals bought in 2021, but we were lucky enough to be able to salvage those deals, not to lose any LP equity. We had different silos of investors, different classes of investment. And so some of the investors actually made great yields because they were sitting in priority to the other set of investors. But yeah, we didn't lose any money, but we learned lots. And at some point, we brought on a acquisition director of asset management, and we went out there to make deals and make deals work. And we bought an asset in Tampa and a multifamily value add deal in Tampa. But it was very difficult to make deals pencil. The same way when we first started out in 2019, COVID hit not far after, and interest rates really plummeted and were brought down to be able to stimulate the economy because they were so worried about a huge crash. So the Fed was and central banks were. So it was hard to make deals pencil up because you had so much rush of capital into the market, non-refundable $500,000, $1 million deposits. And then when inflation started going through the roof, reached 9% at some point, the Fed, some say, did it prematurely or did it a little too late rather. And they started increasing rates 11 consecutive times, took a pause and did a couple more times and kept it at that high rate for a while, which started causing a lot of distress in the commercial real estate space. And then at the same time, you had issues with office space, which was seeing troubles before COVID, but COVID was really the straw that broke the camel's back. People were just not going back to the office, and it resulted in the whole asset class under the commercial real estate umbrella doing not very well. So perfect storm. And I think we're really coming out of that storm currently. So while the deals were not penciling in multifamily prior to the deal that we bought in June of 2024, the multifamily deal, Atlas at Bay Point, named after my firstborn in Tampa Bay, we started looking at other places, not really something totally out of the space, not buying companies or getting into oil and gas, but under the real estate umbrella, what other asset classes made sense. And there was a particular offshoot of multifamily, which is BTR, built to rent, that I was personally very bullish about, and I took that to my team. So we started looking around on how we can get involved in BTR, and there was a developer out of Texas that we partnered with, and now we're building a project named after my secondborn, Apollo, Apollo Oaks in San Antonio. We're building a community of 60 units, 30 duplexes in San Antonio, but it's not your classic build to rent. Happy to discuss that in a moment. But yeah, that's really what CPI has been up to since inception. Very interesting times, a few different storms we went through, COVID and then post-COVID inflation and the interest rates hikes. So, and we find ourselves today. And if you ask me the question, where do I see the market currently? And we asked this question. We have a question we asked from our expert guests that come on our show. If real estate was a clock, and 12 o'clock was top of the market and 6 o'clock was the bottom market, what time is it today? And my personal opinion, we're probably pretty close to 6 o'clock, I would say. Are we really at the bottom of the market, or have we passed that point, and is the market going to eventually turn? I would say we're probably right around 6 o'clock in my opinion, because a lot of things are delayed as well in commercial real estate. But leave it there. Let you jump in.
No, good update. Yes, sounds like a lot going on your end. And then, you know, it's just trying to survive, like the whole thing was survive to 25, right? And I think it was a lot of lessons learned from everyone involved in the industry. You got in towards the tail end where where the peak was in 2022. I would say, you know, my opinion is that I think we're a little bit past 6 o'clock. I think there's some sort of recovery, and I not a great deal, but when I say that, I'm talking more about stabilizing rents or stabilizing occupancy. It depends on what market you're in. You know, like we've got investments in San Antonio, Austin, and Dallas, and Phoenix. Like Phoenix, for example, has turned a corner. Austin, not so much, right? Still going through supply problems. So it just depends on the market you're in. But high level, I think, you know, where I want to take this conversation is around probably a little bit around the BTR space. I think that's really interesting. We actually have a 66 unit development site in San Marcos, which we've been in approvals for the last 18 months. It's taken a little bit longer than what we want, but we should be going vertical here in the next little while. So we also got involved in that space, I think, when there was not a lot of, you know, there was just not a lot of deal volume, right? Like, and now all of a sudden, so there's the BTR stuff that people, you know, couldn't sit around twiddling their thumbs, and now into what at least we're seeing on the RSN side is, and I'd love to hear, you know, your thoughts, is we're probably seeing the dam wall break a little bit, right? And there's a lot of distressed deals starting to hit the market again, a lot more than compared to say 12 months ago. So are you still actively just looking at BTR, or are you still now, you know, picking up the existing multifamily bucket again to see what's out there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, touching on that point, our focus is still multifamily with our other vertical, which is BTR. So in the BTR space, we partner with a local developer in Texas. We're not planning to build any of these communities ourselves. We're not planning to buy any stabilized communities ourselves. We're just planning to grow our footprint with this local developer. And what we're doing, their business model is actually very unique. They've been around, they're from San Antonio, been around for 30 years. And their business model is to buy a piece of land, entitle it, complete all the horizontal. And while they're doing that, they pre-sell these duplexes to end buyer investor types from California and other regions who buy these things for cash flow. They're not cash flowing the way me and you want them to cash flow. They're not at a six cap, but they're cash flowing enough between $500 and $1,000 for these individuals while the property is building equity in the background. And it's fully turnkey. Our developer partner also is vertically integrated. They have a property management company, so they manage these properties for these buyers as well. They do a rate buy down through the lenders, so The rate is pretty low and reasonable, which creates that cash flow for these properties. There are no amenities in these properties. Duplexes between 30 and 30 and 50 duplexes is what they build, so 60 to 100 units. And it takes up the risk out of the stabilization part of the business, the BTR space, because you're selling these individually to end use buyers. They're pre-selling them and they're taking possession of that certificate of occupancy. So it takes a bit of the risk out of the business. But yeah, I mean, as far as multifamily, we're definitely still looking at multifamily. And to give you some numbers of this idea, the bid-ask spread that exists between what the sellers want to sell and what buyers are willing to pay, because where the interest rates are at as a result of the 10-year, really, which constitutes all these numbers, the deals are not penciling. And to give you an interesting metric, we keep detailed records of the deals that come into our inbox. So our deal criteria in, for example, Tampa Bay is a city of 3.2 million people. So a deal criteria is anything over 100 doors, less than $50 million. Those are the deals that come into our inbox. They get added to our deal pipeline. So from those deals that some of them that do interest us, we do a back of the envelope underwriting on them. If it makes sense, we do a full underwriting, and then we get all the rent comps, sales comps, all the other details, property tours. But from the deals that have come into our inbox and the deals that we've been interested in, and we did a research on the trailing 12 months of June 2024. We wanted to see what type of market share we had, because we bought 136 unit deal. Like, let's see what type of market share we have in Tampa in our buy criteria. And we realized that we have a 6% market share. Now, for a small boutique firm, a handful of executives and few other directors and employees, to be able to have that type of market share in a city of 3.2 million is totally astronomical. That's a huge market share. So we realize that a lot of deals are coming to the market, but they're not trading. So currently, again, for our asset profile, we have around 80% of the deals that come into our inbox, they never traded. The deals that match our buy box. So, and for CPI to have a 6% market share in the trailing 12 months of June 2024, or just tells you about that there's not a lot of deals trading. Similar to other markets as well, a lot of deals are coming on. They're not trading. That's the same discussions we've had. Hence why we've looked at other asset classes like BTR, which is very similar. But to be totally frank with you, I think if CPI was any bigger and we had full-time employees on, and rather than having teams out of the Philippines and teams out of the, you know, Eastern Europe and other areas, we couldn't keep the lights on. It was just impossible to keep the lights on, because the groups that have kept the lights on through this time have been groups that have done deals, you know, post GFC, post COVID, they've done a few deals, but those deals are underwater. Their total LP equity is wiped out. And now they're letting go of great talent that was very hard for them to gain. They're letting go of that talent. And, the ones that are really still staying afloat are the ones that also have property management, because they have that property management income coming in and keeping the lights on. So just wanted to touch on that important
point. Yeah, no, it's a good piece of analytical data to show about where you're focused on. I would say that, you know, we've saw a lot of flutter in the market probably early 2024, walked a lot of deals in Central Texas actually, but they ended up not doing anything with offers and really using it to chum the water, to have a negotiating stick with the lenders, right? And I think what we're seeing come 2025 was lenders have had enough, right? They're the extended pretend. And so the deals that are trading, I've seen a massive uptick in deal volume that is just at least hitting my inbox. I'm seeing that bid-ask spread completely reduced to sort of realistic numbers. The deals that we're picking up are 40% below where the market peak was. You know, unfortunately, some equity wipeouts on a couple of deals that we've purchased. But on the flip side, it's very, very tough to raise money right now. Like, it's a great time to be buying. You can show the stats. And look, you and I both know, August, like the pricing in 2022, it may be a blip in the market 10 years time, but it's still a data point, right? You still can measure to it. So I think the fact that you've still got Freddie and Fannie actively lending, you've got a lot of debt, you know, that's still active in the market, means it's not 08 level crises. But you've definitely got enough of the extended pretend, and I'm seeing that across multiple markets. And I'm sure in Tampa, I'm sure if you go knocking on those deals again, you know, maybe there's a deal to be had now at a more realistic price. So it is time to sort of be, good in the buying sense. But tell me, how hard was it to raise in 2024 for your deals? Because it's definitely been a challenging environment, particularly in the retail space, which I'm sure you're active in. But how has the capital raising been?
Yeah, so 2024 capital raising for the Atlas at Bay Point was pretty streamlined for us. It's just that the reason for that, I would contribute it to the fact that we never really turned off the capital raising machine and the marketing side of the business. We're continuously chatting with new investors, bringing them into the pipeline, bringing them into the funnel, and nurturing those leads. Our nurture process is pretty robust. We send out an extensive weekly email every morning on Sunday. And our investor relations team continuously talks with investors and communicates with them. We hold webinars as well. So the nurture process is really strong for us here at CPI. So when we do, and we haven't really done a lot of deals, so we haven't really squeezed the juice out of the leads, the current investor database that we have. So when by the time in June 2024, when we closed on Atlas and Bay Point, we hadn't done a deal for 26 months. So all those leads were there growing, being nurtured. So by the time that deal came, that was a $10.5 million equity raise. We ended up partnering with our current property manager. They brought in close to 50% of the equity, and we brought in the rest. And that stack was filled with retail investors, your average everyday high income earner, your doctor, lawyer, accountant, business owner. And then the other part was there was a couple of co-GPs who came on and brought some of their investors. They invested directly into our Canadian feeder fund. And then we had a somewhat of an institutional, I call them an institutional investor, but they're just a few wealthy, sophisticated guys that put their money together and they cherry picked best sponsors to partner with. We have the Canadian side of the business as well. And then on our Apollo Oaks deal, which was a BTR deal, it was a $4 million equity raise. We closed on that a few months back. And that was a breeze, I would say. It was pretty quick. We brought in there, and I would contribute the reason there is because after many years of working on launching a fund, we finally launched our fund in Canada. And when your listeners hear about the idea of a fund is really a vehicle where you can continuously raise capital and then you go out and buy deals. So you have a basket of deals where your investors who've invested into the fund have exposure to. And let's say if you have a closed-end fund, if it's a 10-year fund, the first year or two is going to be for raising the equity needed for the fund. The next few years is going to go out there and buying the deals. And the couple of years after that is going to be executing the business plan. And the last few years is rounding up the fund and divesting the deals. So that's really, or if you have an evergreen fund, you're continuously raising equity and you're continuously buying deals into the fund. That's your classic version of a fund. We still use the syndication model, but the fund allows us, our Canadian fund really allows us to raise money from Canadian investors who want to use their retirement accounts, their version, our Canadian version of IRAs and 401ks. In Canada, we call them registered funds, RRSPs, RESPs, TFSAs. So similar to the US, Canadian investors wanting to self-direct their retirement accounts, they could into a alternative investment or into a syndicated deal, like a CPI Capital deal. They could self-direct it without a tax event. However, and there's a use of a custodian similar to the US, so the funds never really hit their account. The funds go directly from the institution they're investing with into the deal, so they don't ever go into the investor's hands. So same model. However, the vehicle that a deal is structured in, so the vehicle that a deal is syndicated in, it cannot be a corporation or a limited partnership. It has to be this complex structure called a mutual fund trust, this Canadian structure, which allows Canadians to use their retirement accounts to invest into. Now, to be able to launch that fund and manage it, the upkeep of that fund is very costly and cumbersome. You need to have at least 150 investors. You need to do audited financials. And when you do the audited financials, it's not just on the syndicated entity, but every entity involved. And because of the web of corporations and limited partnerships we have cross-border, that cost would be astronomical. So we came up with a crafty way to put together and an MFT and a mutual fund trust. And just on our last raise alone, without doing any marketing, just by sending a couple emails to our database, we were able to raise $1 million from investors who wanted to use their registered accounts, their retirement accounts, as it's known in the US, to invest into our deal. And the way it really works is the mutual fund trust just acts as a fund of funds or a feeder fund into our Canadian feeder fund. And then the Canadian feeder fund invested into our US master fund. And for, I know there is some words that are common in real estate private equity. So when I'm talking about a fund, I'm just talking about a vehicle that the SPV, really, the single purpose vehicle that we use for our syndicated deal, which is a limited partnership. So every time we have a deal, we create a US limited partnership that the property is owned under, and then we create a Canadian limited partnership that is going to house the Canadian investors. The Canadian limited partnership just invests into the US LP as just another limited partner, getting the same economics. By bringing on this mutual fund trust, you just have the mutual fund trust really sitting above the Canadian LP, which then invests into the Canadian LP. Then the Canadian LP invests into the US LP, which is our, I call our US master fund. And yeah, through that vehicle, we are very hopeful and optimistic about this vehicle we've created, because Canadians have close to $2 trillion sitting in their registered accounts. And it's most times sitting there collecting dust between, you know, 4 and 7%, most times gross. They have to pay fees to be able to, for, on an annual basis. So to be able to self-direct without a tax event and get access to a 15 to 20% returns on a deal, it's something that really interests a lot of Canadian
investors.
How's
that conversation been going with Canadian investors? They're still super interested in, you know, investing here in the US. Are they seeing any of the distress play out? How's that conversation going?
Yeah, I mean, Canadians, the sophisticated Canadian investors who invest with us, they always understand that opportunities are much more bountiful in the US, particularly on the real estate side. The market is just a bigger market. US is more of a renter's nation than Canada is. So that interest has always been there, really started from post GFC, when the Canadian dollar went par with the US dollar, and you had a lot of people from Canada coming to the US and buying homes and investment properties. And that has continued through till today. And there's an interest for Canadian investors to invest into the US. But the other really, the other impetus has been really the Canadians, the difficult market here in Canada to be able to invest and make money because of high taxes and levels of bureaucracy that exist in all different types of investing. That's actually been a bigger push for the investors who come to us. Also, the condo market has been really in distress territory now in Canada, particularly in Vancouver and Toronto, our major cities, where it's a huge immigrant population coming from China. There's been taxes that have been levied against foreign buyers, which has really stalled that. And there was a bit of hypersupply in the condo space. There was a high rise called Butterfly that was built here in Vancouver, and they were selling at $3,000 a square foot. And I think the whole thing got sold out in 90 days. And now the same properties are going for just over $1,500 a square foot. So there's been somewhat of a crash. Yeah, a lot of people have really lost their shirt into condo investing. And that was the pre-sale. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but the business model was high-rise condos going up. Investors would come in, they would buy the pre-sale condo, knowing that it's going to take a few years for that to be built. And then at some point, they would just sell their contract, kind of in a way wholesale, but they had to put some deposits in. So that was very common. I think it's common in Australia and in other jurisdictions as well. So, but yeah, it's taking a hard hit. So because of those reasons, a lot of Canadians have really looked at investing in the US, other places as well. Believe it or not, there's been investors from other regions of Europe. They have also looked at investing with us. We don't have a current investor who's invested, but there's been a lot of conversations. We're just creating the right structure for them to invest. And does it make more sense for them to invest into the Canadian project-specific fund or the U.S. project-specific fund? But that's where we're at as far as the capital raise for our deals. But I think as we eventually get to where we want to be, which is a deal a quarter, be it PTR or a multifamily value add deal, I think at that point we need to kind of grow our investor relations department and marketing department to bring in more leads and nurture more leads. But as of right now, our current database and efforts really suffices for our equity needs.
That's great. That's fantastic. As we come to wrapping up the end of the show here, what's been the biggest lesson you've learned in the last couple of years going through a bit of turbulence in the market?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned so many lessons, really. I'll answer that question from a few different viewpoints. One of the lessons I've learned from, and this is a lesson consistent across a lot of people who've been investing in particularly American real estate, is that as long as you put good debt on the property and as long as you're buying prime piece of property in a great location, you'll do fine long term. And that has been the case many times. So that's one lesson I've really learned. The other part is, the lessons learned in the space has been, you know, partners and team members and talents is really who builds a company. You know, you could be as great mind as you feel you are, but it's those partners, those individuals that come on board and help build a great company. I can share another great lesson I just learned this past weekend. I went with my family to Alberta, to Edmonton, actually a city outside of Edmonton called Bonnyville, which my wife's family, they have a buffalo farm there, 200 heads of buffalo. And just to give you a perspective, the largest buffalo farm in North America has 1,500 heads. So they're at 300. That's a pretty big number. And I was there with my wife's uncle, her maternal uncle, and Uncle Perry was talking to me about that he just recently bought a new quarter. And I'm like, what's a quarter? Is a quarter is 160 acres. I'm like, oh, great. He's like, yeah. And he told me how that deal came about. And he said that one of his neighbors, older guy, came to him and said, hey, I want selling my quarter. Are you interested? He's like, sure. How much you want for it? And he's like, I want $100,000 for it. And Uncle Perry looks back and thinks about it. He's like, hey, but your property is worth way more than that. So yeah, I know. I don't care. I just want $100,000. So anybody else in our space, I mean, it's been taught, we deal with a lot of institutions, so our space is very cutthroat, but Uncle Perry does something very unusual. Even his response was very unusual, he takes a farther step. He goes and gets an appraiser to come and appraise the property. The property comes back at appraisal at $180,000 to $220,000, takes the appraisal back to this neighbor of his and say, hey, this is what the appraisal came back. Neighbor's like, I don't care. I just want $100,000. I want out of this thing. So they go to a lawyer's office and he buys a place. So there are ways to make money in real estate without being shrewd and being cutthroat. So that's another lesson I learned in business as well. So honesty sometimes helps in business.
Love it. Love it. No, it's those old school ways of getting deals done you still hear about today. And they're still out there, right? Because if you fly under the radar with those smaller deals, they're not going to attract the big institutions that are going to be the cutthroat. So keeping your feet grounded, I think, here on planet Earth and having good relationships that go for long, many, many years, will get deals done in the future. So yeah, great piece of advice. At the end of every show, we like to dive into the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, question number one is, what's the daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
Working out, really. Does it help me towards my goals? Absolutely. Mental health is the most important thing. So physical health helps your mental health. So I've been going to the gym every day for, I would say, the last 10 years. Every morning I'm at the gym doing weights. And yeah, there's no off day, because if you create an off day, then you miss an extra day. So if you take Sundays off, for example, then you miss a couple of days. Next thing you know, you go into the gym only, 4 days a week. So I go every day to the gym.
Love it. Love it. Question number two is, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
Yeah, in my career, even though you asked about my career, my mom by far has been the most influential person in my life and career. Her father was a military man who went against the king of Iran and who was end up being thrown into prison. And he was in political prison when my mom was born in 1954. And 1953 was the coup d'etat against Mossadegh, who was overthrew the Shah of Iran. But my mom was born while her dad was in political prison. And when he came out of prison, he had lost all of his military ranking and he got into real estate. And he did real estate for the rest of his life. So my mom had learned a lot about real estate. Real estate is really like a language. It's like learning a new language. If you learn it, you can really speak it. And I learned a lot of stuff about real estate from my mom, and also about difficulty of life, the way she was brought up. And her father eventually came out of prison after 5 years. And she was living with her grandma at this point, because her mom had remarried, her dad took her back, but then he remarried, so she grew up with the stepmom and what have you. So I learned the most from my mom.
That's awesome. Is she still with us today?
Of course, yeah. She's awesome. Here. Yeah. That's tough great. As a nail. So yeah.
That's awesome. I'm sure you could write a whole book about her and all those stories there. That's insane.
I haven't even touched the surface, but yeah,
I could imagine.
I learned from her on a daily basis. I still learn a lot from her.
That's awesome. Those type of stories, you know, they're just a treasure trove of interesting things that, you know, as you know, adults, we, you know, take for granted, right? You know, being thrown in political jail, like, that's insane. So, question, I've even lost track of what question I'm up to now.
I gotta tell you one thing. I want people here that might think that my grandma was pretty cold hearted, but when my grandpa went to prison, he was set to be executed, but then the Shah of Iran actually had leniency on a lot of these people who went against him at that point. And maybe that was the reason for his eventual downfall in 79. But his sentence was demoted eventually it eventually came down to 5 years. So he was eventually released. But my grandma didn't know that. So trying to be my devil's advocate for my grandma.
No, it's two sides to every story, right? So question number three is what's the most influential tool in your business that you use on a daily basis that you can't run the business without?
I mean, you can't even compare AI. AI has blown out of the water. Every other tool is somewhat recent, so we're still learning about it. I have paid ChatGPT on my phone that I ask questions out loud about. I even argue with my mom, and ChatGPT comes to save the day when we have discussions. It actually speaks in all languages, so it speaks in Farsi. So if there is a miscommunication with me and my mom, I'll tell ChatGPT to talk in Farsi. But in businesses as well, it's really helped us. Our VP of investments, Paul Hopkins, has actually created his own GPT where he underwrites multifamily deals. So he just uploads the broker's OM and then extracts all the information that he needs. So it makes our underwriting process much more streamlined. I mean, it helps in every aspect possible. So that's as far as AI, but other tools we use on a daily basis, we use our HubSpot as our CRM. And then we use Asana as our project management software. We use Slack as our communication. Those are some of the tools that we use here at CPI. But AI, I think, is going to just take over all of these.
Question number four is, I kind of already asked this before, but I'm going to ask a quick one again. In your time as a human, doesn't have to be even in business, what's been in one sentence, what's been the biggest lesson you've learned?
Here, this is the way I'll answer it. The greatest lesson I will give my two sons, one of them is 7 months, the other one is 21 months. The greatest lesson I can give them, number one, it's not the greatest, it's just the number one, because everything else falls there, is that your name is your reputation, and it'll carry on for the rest of your life. So if you tarnish that name and that reputation, that will carry on. So do your best to keep your name in the best, in the most reputable way possible, your name. And that could be in a business, that could be your brand, right? Your company, that brand is the most important thing. So that would be one of the greatest lessons I've learned in life. Maybe think of a couple other lessons I've learned. I'll leave it there.
That's a good one. No, look, last question, my friend, is where can people reach you to continue the conversation? That would be in your sphere. Where do they go?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. I'm actually a LinkedIn top voice. Not to toot my own horn here, but I'm a LinkedIn top voice. So invitation only that you can become a LinkedIn top voice. But I create a lot of great content and information. I'm very active on there. I have a team that watches all my LinkedIn messages. So yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn, August Biniaz. I'm the only August Biniaz on there. So yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn. Send me a message. Send me a connection request. Not just follow, actually press connect, because it's different just to follow or connect. I'm very active on there. Check us out at our website, cpicapital.com. And, come on, check us out our podcast as well that Reed is going to be on very soon, Real Estate Investing Demystified. But yeah, LinkedIn probably the best place to connect with me. Happy to book a call and chat more about real estate and other ideas.
I love it, mate. Well, look, I want to just thank you so much for jumping on today's show. Some of the things I took away from today's show, I think it's resilience, right? It's a big thing that I've known you guys for the better part of 6 or 7 years now, probably when we first, you and your wife, Ava, And you're sticking at it, and you know how to keep the lights on, you know, in good times and bad. You've learned to pivot. We've all had to learn to pivot in some pretty rough times, but you're still here. You're still sticking around the hoop, which is freaking awesome to see. You know, big kudos to you guys. And just because I've known a bit of your personal story about how hard it's been to start where you originally were, and we'll talk a little in the green room about, you know, how it's the fund has evolved, but you're still stuck at it. So I real big kudos to you, man, and your team. And I just wish you all the best of success, you know, moving forward in what I think is a great time to be buying assets. So did I leave anything out there?
No, the only thing you left out is that you're a gentleman and a scholar yourself. It was great to see you early in the morning in Vegas working out and doing those weights. So yeah, some of you might not see Reed's body, but the guy is like 6'4", just chiseled out his whole body, and every morning is at the gym. So don't mess with a man. So he's a great GP to be investing with, because a man who takes care of his body and his mind is going to take care of your money.
Thank you, my friend. But look, again, I want to thank you for jumping on today's show. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll catch up very, very soon. Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from August. Remember, he is a top voice on LinkedIn. That's August, AugustBiniaz, August Biniaz. Follow him, CPI Capital, right, August? .com. And yeah, if you do like this show, the easiest way to give it is a 5-star review. Share it with your friends. Give us a like on YouTube, on any platform that you listen to the pod on. And we're going to do it all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.